Good morning. 35 past the hour. You are listening to Faith Radio, and we are so thankful that you have joined us wherever you might be along our network. I'm Bill Meyer. Dr. Sylvia Freid is a Christian therapist, and she's the co-author of a book called The Digital Invasion. She recently joined Faith Radio's Dr. Linda Mental and shared that if we aren't addicted to technology, a lot of us are at least overly dependent on it. She also shared a few signs of addiction to watch for in yourself and your kids.
Some of the signs, especially for children, is to see, do they become anxious if they can't be on their device in social media, especially with video gaming? A lot of kids will become angry if they can't play their games. Do they get violent? Another sign is, are they giving up things in real life? I went through this with my son where he didn't want to play the drums anymore. He didn't want to play soccer anymore. All of those in real life things he enjoyed doing, he would rather be playing his video games. So really observing that with your kids. Are they spending more time in their digital life? Are they able to find a balance? And are we spending productive time? Is this something productive in their digital world, or is it just waste of time in video gaming or going through social media feeds and not being productive?
You can hear Sylvia's entire conversation with Dr. Linda Mental by going to myfaithradio.com and visiting Dr. Linda's program page.
Do you feel like your words are going in through one of your teen's ears and out the other? Well, maybe it's time to think through the content of those words. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Here's a couple of phrases I heard from my dad all the time. You'll do it because I told you to do it. And as long as you're in my house, you live by my rules. You probably heard similar things from your parents when you were a kid, and maybe they worked to keep you in line. But I can tell you one thing, the because I said so line doesn't work on any teens now. So let's spend less time making up arbitrary rules and more time building meaningful relationships with our teens.
Have a grown-up teen who doesn't want to move out? Mark Gregston wrote an ebook called When Your Prodigal Won't Leave Home, and you can download your free copy when you visit us online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
Good morning. 37 past the hour at Faith Radio. Is your health insurance about to get a lot more expensive due to Obamacare? That just might happen. Here to fill us in on that and other medical issues, Dr. Rosemary Stein with the Christian Medical Association. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, Dr. Bill. How are you?
I'm well. Okay, so the so-called Affordable Care Act hasn't made health insurance very affordable, and now I see the story rates are set to increase in some states, like 18 to 23% higher premiums. How is this going to impact the healthcare system?
Well, first of all, I think that Congress should rename the Affordable Care Act so that we can call it what it should be, which is the Unaffordable and Increasingly Expensive Care Act, because that's really what it is for the person who pays the bill. And yes, I took a look at our premiums that are set to start in the fall, and the number is correct. Our premiums are going to go up by 18%. But what it really means is that the people who, the workers who are paying the bill, are going to not be able to do so, or find that their budget does not allow for the increase. And they're going to go off of that and go into the health, the state exchanges, and then be sort of let go from their doctor, because their doctors are not going to allow them to stay with them, or not going to take that new health care premium, so that everybody is going to get a bad deal. The workers, the employers, and the doctors who are going to have to let some of their patients go.
This is
not what we signed up for.
No, we did not. I heard several of the biggest health care insurance providers dropping out of these exchanges, including a Blue Cross Blue Shield and Aetna. How is that going to impact the whole health insurance mandate thing?
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about that. And how will that? I mean, I just think that the flow of dominoes is going to take us to places that we're not even sure where we're going to go with that. If Blue Cross Blue Shield and United Healthcare, Aetna decide that they're not going to play the game, what are we going to be left with? And so who our family doctors, and I can say that this for my part, because I feel that I'm part of many, many families. We're like family. And so what in essence is occurring is that a bit of your family unit is going to be destroyed. That's a scary thing, because you have a really strong relationship many times of trust and a bond with your pediatrician and with your family doctor, and that's not going to be there anymore.
I think a lot of Americans, including myself, to be honest with you, are still confused about exactly how Obamacare is supposed to work, but why it's not working, why it's driving up health care premiums, and why these insurers are dropping out. Can you explain why, I mean, just from an economics and a medical perspective, why what their intent was, but why it's simply not workable?
Well, many of the people that weren't on didn't have insurance did not necessarily want to have insurance. I can say for our practice that we had two or three employees that even though we offered insurance, we pay 75% of their premium at our practice. And there were still some employees that, so that they didn't have to pay that small 25%, they would just not sign up for insurance. See, there's nothing that you can do to get that small percentage of people in, and they know that they're healthy people, so they don't want to be insured, and they don't want to even pay that small amount. Well, we made it through Obamacare so that that percentage had to be insured and took those people in. But also, those that are the most vulnerable, which are the oldest and the youngest, then became more susceptible to being in Obamacare. We decreased the number, in other words, the amount that the family had to make for a child, a young child, to qualify for the health care plan, for the federal health care plan. And so that brought a lot more kids that their parents could have paid for them, or their parents' employer could have paid for them. But we brought this whole group of now newly uninsured people, let's say, into the regs. And this is what has happened. So those of us that are somewhat healthy and are in an age range where we don't get sick are the ones who have to pay for those people who are new in the plan, because that's what's mandated now. That's what's possible now. So it's sort of backwards health care. And really what I'm seeing is that people, the doctors that have been around and have that relationship going with their patients, those are the ones that are the most disenfranchised and the ones that are leaving health care in the highest numbers. And so we're really battling one side of the problem, which is that we have a greater number of sicker patients, and that's what's driving up the premium. And then the other thing is that we have the doctors that are leaving. So we're facing a shortage of especially primary care doctors. So both of those things make for a very precarious situation.
Do we actually have any stats on how many physicians are leaving the medical profession altogether?
I haven't seen it lately, but I do remember that it was in the hundreds of thousands across the United States.
Yikes.
That were leaving early, or they were looking for another profession.
Can you imagine? I mean, you obviously know, you've been through medical school and residency and internship and all that. The number of years of training, and the reason that these physicians went into the medical profession to begin with, because of, for the most part, altruistic reasons and compassion and wanting to help others, they spend all these years of their life preparing. And now because of this, as you said, upside down Obamacare and the result, they're leaving. That's so troubling.
Yeah, and every day I hear about more and more friends who have their doctors have left the profession, and so they're left having to find a doctor. And not that their new doctor isn't any good, but it's truly not the same because the level of trust and the bonding that had occurred over many years is not there anymore, and you're left having to rebuild that relationship. And I also find that some of the best doctors are the ones that are leaving.
We're talking to Dr. Rosemary Stein. She's with the Christian Medical Association, a wonderful group. If you haven't heard of them, I would encourage you to go to their website, Christian Medical and Dental Association, CDMA, and we'll take a quick break and be right back here at Faith Radio. Welcome back. It's Faith Radio. Bill Meyer with Dr. Rosemary Stein with the Christian Medical Association. And Rosemary, let's switch gears for a minute and I talk about something that I know is a grave concern to you and to me as well. Since you're a pediatrician and you work with a lot of teenagers and their parents, story in the news this week, a new word has sprung up in our culture, adulting. What exactly does that mean?
I can't believe that we have a new word in our dictionary, and it is adulting. And there are even T-shirts out there to say, I'm not ready to adult today.
Oh.
Adult has become a verb.
I don't want to adult. I'm not ready to grow up.
That's right, and it's not 14-year-olds wearing it, obviously. We have our 18 to 28-year-olds wearing it. Actually, I saw a person that looked like she was beyond the 20s and 30s wearing it. So what it means is I don't want to behave like a responsible person where the buck stops here. The sad reality is that now our colleges are left with having to train our children for the adult world. So now they have adulting classes that we give in colleges to try to train our young adults how to live in this world and how to manage day-to-day problems.
And speaking of that, University of North Carolina, right there in your backyard, is actually offering courses in adulting. What exactly are they teaching these young people?
How to budget, how to manage unforeseen problems, how to manage emotions, how to change a tire. So a lot of I know you guys are probably pulling your hair out there, a lot of the things that they were not taught in our homes are being taught in colleges because the colleges realized that they were having to put out fires all the time. And I can tell you, for one, as an adjunct teacher to medical schools, that the problem doesn't stop in colleges. It actually it's still going on in grad schools where the parents are calling even medical schools and saying, hey, what's going on with my baby? And how come she's so upset?
Oh, no.
And they're the ones having to put out these fires. So it occurred and it was one or two per year of medical school. Now it's going up to 20 to 30% of the kids, even in grad school, are having to press the adulting, not ready to adult button, and for the school to take on these problems, or for mom and dad to fly in as an emergency and take care of our young to be doctors, which is very concerning. If you're not qualified to take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of families and healthcare of babies? But this is an overall problem, not just in medical schools. It's just that our kids are simply not ready for life because in our homes we're not preparing them for life.
Well, and that's the bigger issue. The 30,000-foot level question is, why is this happening in the United States? And a big part of it, I know you and I have talked about this before, is this child-centered parenting philosophy. I'm sure you see it a lot in your work as a pediatrician. But can you explain why I think many parents in this day and age believe that, making sure their kids have everything they want immediately when they want it and not, you know, experience any frustration or delay of gratification that I've just got to give my little baby everything. And often at the peril of their marriage, they're focusing so much on their kids that their marriage suffers, which we know in the long run harms the child. But where does this all come from? Is it just this kind of humanistic, secular mindset? These secular parenting gurus telling parents that it's all about your little baby?
Well, you know, and it comes from even before that. As men and women, we forgot what our roles are in society. And what was essentially forgotten is that women are people builders. We're not here to just have a relationship with our children once our children are born into our families. They're a wonderful gift, but we're here to build them into people who will be fruitful and helpful and of strength in the next generation. And since we forgot that essential part of society, then we have forgotten also that because of that, because we're building people, that our children cannot be in the center of our homes, and we cannot build them as people who think about themselves only. And so that's where we've made our children very vulnerable because of that. We don't want to give them everything because it's difficult for us. We shouldn't want to give them everything because it's bad ultimately for them. And that's where we're creating very fragile people. And at the smallest problem, they fall apart. And that's a very difficult thing to see. A 23-year-old who's really in maturity, a 12 and a 13-year-old. And that's what's happening. That's the whole adulting issue, is that their maturity level when they're going to college, even though they're 18 or 19 years old, they're really like a 12 to 13-year-old. So step back and look at your teenager and say, okay, what age are they really? And where do I have to go? How far do I have to push to get them to that age where they should, their number matches up to their maturity level?
So, Rosemary, we just got about a minute and a half left. Speak to particularly the grandparents who are listening right now, because I think grandparents can play an important role here in helping their adult children to see some of these issues. And, of course, without being overly pushy or controlling, but just to encourage these moms and dads to say, okay, what does your child really need from you?
You're absolutely right. And the thing is that grandparents, and if you do have great-grandparents, you still have the blueprint. And really what it is, it's God's blueprint for raising children or for building people. And so those grandparents still have that blueprint. And that's where it's very important for that information to be passed on. And you have hit the nail on the head. It cannot be a pushy thing. It has to be in love and in patience. So very prayerfully consider how to get that information back to your children and try to put them back on track. Because obviously your children as grandparents grew up and they're productive in society. So what did you do right? And what can be passed on so that this new not ready to adult problem does not get passed on to your grandchildren?
Really well said. I would encourage you to go to Rosemary Stein's Facebook page. She's with the Christian Medical Association, and you'll find some great articles and links there. And Rosemary, thank you so much once again for your time, for your commitment to biblical truth when it comes to both medical issues and to raising children in this day and age. And I'm hoping and praying that we see some changes in our culture and that we have less 25-year-olds who need to be adulting.
That's right. That's exactly what we're looking for. Let's build people again.
Thank you, Dr. Rosemary Stein. It's Bill Meyer here taking a quick break, and this is the Faith Radio Network.